welcome to First Things First. It is a Monday morning here in New York City. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. We have got a great, great show for you today.
Yes.
We got a week until the Super Bowl, and we got a week's worth of material to talk about. We also got some basketball. The Lakers could be adding another star by next week. The Steelers are looking at trade options for Antonio Brown, but we got to start with New England. Half of the Super Bowl teams that are in it. We'll get to the Rams in a second. Patriots landed upon Atlanta on Sunday, site of Super Bowl 53. It is the site of Super Bowl 9 for Tom Brady. He won five of them already. In fact, there isn't much he hasn't done in this league. Aren't many awards he hasn't won. So at the age of 41, the oldest quarterback in the league, is it possible he would retire after this game? Well, we'll let Tom Brady himself tell you.
Is there any chance that this is your last game? Zero.
Zero.
Say it. I don't want to just say it.
There's zero. Yeah. Okay. There's zero. I've said that for a long time. I feel like I'm asked that a lot, and I feel like I repeat the same answer, but no one wants to believe me.
I feel like one of the coaches in the AFC East, like, trying to tell you, are you sure this is not the end?
I know. I just, you know, I've set a goal for myself at 45, and like I said before, it's very hard to make it that far. I know how hard it was this year, you know, and the commitment it takes, and hopefully I've learned from some of the things that happened this year to be better next year, but every year is tough.
CC, we keep asking, he keeps answering, we ask again, he answers again. He has said 45 multiple times, and yet for some reason, we keep asking. What do you make of what Tom Brady had to say?
I like the fact that Tom's answering the questions, because he's the one set it out there at 45. Now, there was a conflict between what he was trying to do and what Belichick would typically allow, even for a star player. We just haven't seen Belichick and the Patriots invest in older players, players that potentially are on. He'll trade you before that last year where your potential is already exhausted. So Belichick's been a guy that moved off of the star players. Brady's been consistent as far as he wants to play a long, long time. But I think that the threshold of breaking through 40, and since they've been 40, this year I thought was the most important year in the fact that they lost Nate Solder, their left tackle. They were able to replace him with a rookie, and that offensive line, it's been fantastic. So for me, with Tom Brady getting to 40, and now at 40, they're protecting him as well as they've protected him the last 10 years, it's going to be hard to – I understand why he'd want to keep playing. The game is not getting tougher for him like for aging players. The game is getting easier, not only just based on the rules, but based on Dante Scarnecchia, that great offensive line coach, what he does from a protection standpoint. Defensively, they always are going to support them, not giving up a bunch of points. So I can see this continuing. He's trying to be true to form. I like the little bit in there he said, it's going to be hard to get to. But I'm going to try.
Well, so a lot of things I think you said are key, most notably not getting hit. Like Tom Brady, if he hasn't been sacked this postseason, C pointed out that over the last quarter of the season as well, he's one of the few lowest sacked quarterbacks in football. Like, if his brain's not going to get worse and his accuracy is only going to trail off, I would say, a little bit each year, but he's still one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league. The things you would worry about is overall arm strength, which was never his biggest strength, and the ability to take a punishment, particularly late in the season when it's cold outside. Well, he hasn't had to deal with that at all this postseason. He's only been hit three times, and he's been sacked zero times. I think he was the sixth lowest sacked quarterback in the regular season to go along with that. But the reason that I do think it's a relevant question and it should be asked is when Brady first set out, when he first started talking about playing till he was 45 years old, that was three seasons ago, right after they had lost that AFC Championship game 20-18 to Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos, and Peyton then retired after winning the Super Bowl. Since he said, yeah, I want to play till I'm 45, he's won another Super Bowl to get him past Montana, gotten to another one and lost to the Eagles, and won an MVP that year, and then won, is in this Super Bowl. And so now you're like, well, you were saying 45, but at the time, did you think you were going to go to three straight Super Bowls, have a chance to start your career with a Super Bowl win over the Rams, and then potentially end your career with a Super Bowl win over the Rams? But this is the most remarkable Tom Brady stat that I've seen recently. Dusty showed it to me this morning. Here's Brady in his 20s versus Brady in his 40s. And I understand in his 20s he started out as a game manager, but if we can show it, Brady So Brady in his 40s has a higher passer rating, a better touchdown interception ratio, higher completion percentage, more yards per game. All of those than in his 20s. So it's not 30s versus 20s. It's 40s versus 20s. And now he's at 2.5 seasons of experience of playing in his 40s.
Do you think we'd be having the same conversation if he wasn't winning, if he wasn't playing this well, if the team wasn't making it to the playoffs?
No, absolutely not. Because we all his career would be a lot like the other legends that we've seen. His body begins to deteriorate, and or he doesn't have the support around him to be able to win. Yes, Tom Brady, it's about more than his performance now. It's about winning. Can he guide his team? This season, not the best season for Tom Brady, but he gets his team. Now, they weren't great on the road. They struggled a little bit on the road this year in 8 games, 3-5. But they get it done the AFC Championship game. So it's about winning in the NFL. I like the fact how you mentioned 3 years ago when he said this. Now, I believe in the back of Tom Brady's mind, he wanted to remove that comparison between him and Peyton Manning. Now, I believe that was an age thing, but also I believe it was a Super Bowl and the greats of the greats thing. So I believe also from an age standpoint, he wanted to play longer than Peyton Manning played. Now, we saw Peyton Manning at the end of his career, and we saw his health begin to fail him, and that's why he quit playing, because he couldn't play to that level. Tom setting that, I believe, as a real goal, and Peyton Manning being the target, I believe led him to here. He's taking care of his body. You got to give him credit. And, which I believe is even harder, he's kept his mind engaged. And that right there, I believe, is remarkable, dealing with Bill Belichick every day for 18 years, hard to impossible.
And I think it's perfect point, the Brady versus Manning, when so often we do Brady versus Montana, because I think Manning is the quarterback Brady had measured himself against. And we have some evidence of this, evidence that Tom Brady wishes we didn't have. But if you remember during the Deflategate saga, when his text came or his email to a friend came out, someone brought up Peyton. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, yeah, but Peyton's only got a couple years left. I'm going to play another 8 or 8 to 10, I think he said. So even then, he was, even if he wasn't publicly stating it, he was already thinking in his mind's eye, I'm going to play till my mid-40s. Peyton's about done. That's when there will no longer be a discussion about who the greatest quarterback of this era actually was. And he was right. Like, even if he doesn't play again, which he's going to, obviously, that discussion has ended. Like, nobody does the Manning versus Brady comparison anymore. And that was a real discussion for the majority of their careers. And for a good portion of that, most people leaned Manning based on the raw ability, even though Brady had the rings.
Why is it so hard to walk away from the game, even if your body is letting you down a little bit or you know you've played long enough? It seems that for professional athletes, they have such a hard time, even when they know that it's time, walking away.
It's such a special time in your life, and there's nothing that will ever be able to replace it. And those who I've talked to that have been very, very successful, that they realize they were in a special time in their life. They're at a special age, especially with a special group of people. Because regardless of what type of job you have afterwards, or if you decide to transition into something else, you won't be in that rarefied atmosphere as far as the young people, the amount of money, the type of influence, the type of energy they bring to the office every day. You can't be replaced, the euphoria of it. And the last thing I would say, and people don't like to refer to it a lot, but it's hard to give up the roar of the crowd. It is a drug. Now, certain people take it the right way, and other people are able to deal with it in, better than others. But the roar of people calling your name, and for you to be able to do something to make people stand on their feet to applaud your overall ability, that's a tough adjustment. Who would be in a rush to give that up?
Well, that's the, I mean, see, you've done, obviously, you've now been out of the league longer than you were in the league, and you've had a bunch of really cool, fulfilling jobs. But I would imagine nothing has come close to 80,000 people in the Metrodome cheering because you catch a touchdown. Like, and that's I would assume it's one of the same reasons some bands continue to tour, even though they got all the money in the world. Like, they might not even like each other anymore. But the ability to, through your singular talent, generate that type of reaction from those numbers of people, I think it's a singular atmosphere where it's possible. Like, there is no roaring crowd here. Mark Cuban once said, when he was talked about his businesses versus the Mavericks, he said, Apple can have the greatest quarter ever. They ain't throwing them a parade. Like, you know, and so the ability for that to be kind of validated in real time by other people, I would imagine is intoxicating.
All right, we'll talk about this from a number of different angles over the course of the morning. Let's get to some basketball on the other side. Is it time for the Lakers to move on from their head coach, Luke Walton? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. This February, the greatest event in motorsports is back. The Daytona 500 kicks off the 2019 NASCAR season. It is on February 17th, only on Fox. We'll get to LeBron James in a second, but first, a couple of big plays you might have missed from last night. Bucks, Thunder, Paul George all over Giannis.
Listen, Paul George got him there, and Giannis got blocked at the rim at least, I think, twice in this game. Go get it, PG-13.
Good game last night. OKC looked good at home.
Man, some really good NBA games last night. It was the first Sunday without football in 20 weeks. The NBA picked up the slack for us.
Ooh, Mavs, Raptors. Luka Doncic finds Dennis Smith Jr. for the alley and the... Oop.
That was one of Luka's double-digit assists. Luka Doncic is now the only teenager in NBA history with multiple triple-doubles. And DSJ trying to get his name off the trade block after a little disappointed start to the season.
Yeah, very good news for Mavs fans there. Dennis Smith Jr. playing well.
Lakers and Suns. Devin Booker drives to the basket, gets fouled. Somehow, though,
Ooh.
Gets it to drop.
Ooh.
I hope one day the NBA fans get a chance to see Devin Booker playing for a winner. Now, you talking about a shot maker, someone who can score the ball? He's like Klay Thompson who can dribble.
I'll tell you this. The Suns, as inept as they've been, him, plus DeAndre Ayton, who's been overshined by Luka, but's been really good. And they're going to have another top five pick, you'd imagine. They might actually have found their way into a core.
All right, more from this game. Rajon Rondo, a lot of minutes last night, pulls off the Michael Jordan-like aerial stunt right there.
He's got those huge hands now. That's what he's legendary for, besides a mean disposition.
I thought when he took off, I was like, is Rondo trying to dunk this? But no, this is more Rondo's speed right there.
When he took off, I thought he was D. Brown. Then he turned back into Rondo.
That would have been a bad loss for the Lakers to the Suns. It's good they have Rondo back. Speaking of them,
LeBron remains sidelined with that groin injury, the first substantial injury of his career. He's been out over a month already, but reportedly still having a big impact on the organization. There is a growing belief that LeBron's camp is not happy with head coach Luke Walton. Lakers are 26-24 with the ninth place record in the conference. Nick, is Luke Walton the right fit for LeBron and the Lakers?
I do not know, and nobody knows. Anybody that claims to have the strongest of opinions on this, I believe, is misleading themselves. We have not seen this team at full strength, but for a dozen games all year. We have not seen Luke Walton coach a team with real expectations, aside from the interim stint with the Warriors in the 73-win season ever. And you can make, I think I could be the prosecutor or the defense on this argument. If I wanted to get rid of Luke Walton, I would talk about the lack of growth of the players. I would talk about the stagnation of guys that we thought were blue chippers. And I would talk about the lack of what I think is creativity on some sidelines, out of bounds, and after timeouts plays where the best coaches can really make their money. And if I were defending him, I'd say, okay, how many guys in the league would do well when their best player's out a month, when he's never been hurt, when Rondo's been hurt twice this year, when a guy got suspended early in Ingram, Lonzo is dinged, Kuzma's playing with a bad hip. Like, what do you want? This team was in fourth place beating the Warriors when LeBron got hurt. So I just think the jury is not even, it hasn't even gone to the jury yet. It's not even that they're still out. We need more time. This is Luke Walton's first major season as a head coach with real expectations, and there are parts of it that I've been impressed by and parts of it that have been concerning, but I also don't buy that LeBron is trying to push him out. This was said on a podcast by someone who doesn't cover the Lakers. Jackie McMullen's an excellent reporter, but she's more East Coast-centric. If Brian Windhorst or Zach Lowe or Woj or Shams or one of the many Lakers reporters wrote this, then I would take it with more than a grain of salt that I'm taking it right now.
Well, there were questions about Luke Walton. And ultimately, we know, regardless of what's going on in the NBA, LeBron, besides the Warriors, LeBron's going to get blamed for it. So before LeBron even got there, there were question marks about Luke Walton that were fair. And they would have been fair to any NBA coach. One of the things when you don't have a chance to win a championship and you have lottery picks on your roster, one of the things in weighing judging a coach beside what do they do, dead ball, timeout, situations like that, what do, is are there younger players developing?
Yeah.
Now, one of the issues that I believe is worth discussing is when the players don't develop, we always blame the coach. You know why? Because we don't like to blame the players. But the players are more at fault with lack of development than the coaches are. Because the coaches are trying to develop the players, but are they putting in the necessary work to make themselves better? We always blame the coach. Wherever LeBron has been, the coach has always been in question. The only thing happened in Miami where he had Pat Riley, who would not budge, and he was not coaching LeBron. He was not going to replace Eric Spoelstra, who was an unproven coach at the time. But LeBron believed in Dwayne Wade. And Dwayne Wade told him that Sproles was a good up-and-coming coach, and he could trust him. Every other season, almost, LeBron's been in the NBA. The coach has been in question. The big thing is now the Lakers have to make sure they don't lose patience. Don't forget what the model was. The model was about the summer of 2019. And we didn't know 50 games in with a record at 26-24, LeBron missing a month. Because if we're being fair to Luke Walton with all that happening, this wouldn't be a question. They would continue with the season because LeBron has missed the month. And all the lack of player development, that's not on Luke Walton. Kuzma's developing. So how's Kuzma developing and Lonzo? He's not developing as fast. Ingram's not developing as fast. Is that really all Luke Walton's fault? So I just believe be patient. Don't forget what the plan was. The plan was about the summer of 2019, and we're still headed towards that.
And I just think there's a false narrative surrounding LeBron and Coach Killer. LeBron was drafted by a team where Paul Silas was the coach. Paul Silas, a year and a half in, Cleveland moved on from him and hired Mike Brown. Mike Brown was the coach the rest of LeBron's time there. Then he went to Miami. Spo was the coach the entire time there. Then he went to Cleveland, where they had hired David Blatt to deal with a young, not championship anywhere close team, and LeBron signs with them. And Blatt, a year and a half, I think with a lot of LeBron's pushing, was out the door.
But also before they hired Blatt, they hired Ty Lue, made him before they hired Blatt. So Blatt inherited Ty Lue, and they made Ty Lue the highest paid assistant. So when you start a situation like that, typically it's not going to end well.
And so the evidence is, it's not like people were lining up to hire David Blatt after that. It's not like David Blatt's like, oh, you fired this great coach. Two coaches have been fired under LeBron's watch. Paul Silas, who didn't get another job for 5 years, and then when he got it, it was in Charlotte, short-lived. And David Blatt, who will never coach in the NBA again. Like, there's always tension because they talk about LeBron so much. And with Spo, it was touch and go for a moment. But they were smart to keep Eric Spoelstra because he proved himself to be an excellent NBA coach. But there's not this long list of coaches left in LeBron's wake. The only one that you can directly say LeBron helped get fired was David Blatt. And it was the right decision. They won the championship that year with Ty Lue as the head coach.
There's a report out now that the Lakers are looking to hire or to bring someone in, another superstar, another big star to help LeBron before the trade deadline in the NBA. What do you make of that?
All right, so I don't know how this is possible. Like, unless they think they're getting Anthony Davis, which the trade deadline's in 10 days, spoiler alert, they're not. There's no one that you would give up your ability to sign Kawhi Leonard or Kyrie Irving in free agency to bring in. There's that second tier Bradley Beal level star. So
right.
If they're going to make a trade, it's going to be for guys like this: Thad Young, Vucevic, Bojan Bogdanovic, guys that are on expiring contracts that you would include Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and a first-round pick to bring them in and keep all your cap flexibility. It would be but not a star, like a C-lister in the NBA, like superstar, all-star in the tier beneath that. But I think you agree with me on this. You don't want to give up your flexibility for what you said the plan was this summer.
Yeah, and stay to the plan. Don't lose your patience just because you're inside the NBA season. Because Boston's not going to trade Kyrie to L.A.
No.
During the season in the next 10 days. And AD is not leaving the Pelicans until potentially this summer at the earliest. Remain patient. Get LeBron back healthy. Get the rest of the roster back healthy. Get into the playoffs. Try to win a series. Head to the summer and then try to land Kawhi, which I would do. I'd be trying to land Kawhi.
There are two names. Like Kemba Walker's on expiring deal, but I do not think the Hornets want to move him. And Mark Gasol's an interesting one because he has a player option, but he is available. If he were to say, I'm going to turn down the player option so it becomes an expiring contract, that's a move they potentially could make. But I think they like how Zubats is playing, and all of a sudden they have a legitimate depth at center. But I don't see them bringing in anyone with a name bigger than Nikola Mirotic. Like, that's the level of player we're talking about.
They seem to only want to bring in names that CeCe and I would have a hard time pronouncing. Big night for Zubats last night, 24 points.
Absolutely.
Time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. Lakers have three of their starting five out with injuries, but they still beat the Suns 116-102 last night. Brandon Ingram, 22 points. We've been watching him. Nick, put a grade on the Lakers without LeBron.
I'm going to give him a C-. I'd give him a better grade, but those losses to the Knicks and Cavs are absolutely unforgivable, and that's the reason they're not 8-8 instead of 6-10 during the break. So C-, not a total disaster, but worse than you would have hoped.
Yeah, it's hard to – they just barely passed. Barely passed.
Give him a D?
I don't consider a D a passing grade.
Oh, okay.
Because you got to be eligible. You got to be above a 2.0.
Oh, so okay.
Don't try to come around here with no Ds.
Standards in the Carter household.
Joyce Carter's not playing that. I'll go with the C-, though.
Okay.
All right, take a break. Coming up, can the Patriots slow down Todd Gurley? That's next. This is First Things First. Part to the NFL now. It's been over a week since the no call in the Saints-Rams game. According to reports, there is concern around the NFL that four officials in the NFC title game live in Southern California. Nick, what do you make of this?
I make that this might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard. All right, so the idea is because the guys live in Southern California along with 30 million people, the fix was in. If the fix was in, they picked a really risky time to execute the fix.
Yeah,
if the fix was in, call a hold on the Ted Ginn play that set up the go-ahead field goal. Like, this would be the most incompetent fix job ever. And the fact, they live in the sparsely populated area known as Southern California. I can't believe this has legs. This is crazy to me, C.
Yeah, it's just funny because also they had to get the defender with the Rams to line up in the wrong position,
right,
get the wrong call, and be totally running in the blind. Yes, so to me it's really only two officials, the side judge and the back judge. When they came to defer on the call, one of them was going to call it. So for me it's not about the four, it's about the two involved. And they tried to get it right, they just missed it.
Do not assign to malice what can be better explained by incompetence. That is the story here. Don't make some conspiracy. Guys just screwed up.
Super Bowl now less than a week away. The Rams are there for the first time in 17 years. The Patriots are there for the first time since this same time last year. Longtime Pats defensive stalwart Patrick Chung took to the mic, waxed poetic about what he thought this game was going to turn into.
We love you. We love you, man. Hey. I appreciate the support. We're going to go out here and kick their ass, baby. Hey, let me get a beat LA on three. Ready? One, two. Hold on. All right. One, two, three. Yeah, baby.
It brings back memories of how many times I've clipped the beginning parts of all the good things in my life that I tried to record. At least he did it the right way. CeCe, how evenly matched are these teams?
That's funny.
Well, I don't think it's as even. Like, on the field, from a talent standpoint, it's even. But then you bring in the coaching and the experience. That, to me, makes a decisive advantage for New England. So regardless of what you think, regardless of this game, the Super Bowl, is different than any other game. And no team, no organization has the experience that New England. So for me, they're not even. There's no way they can be even. Looking at the quarterbacks in Tom Brady, understanding the situation, understanding what media day is going to be like, understanding the family requirements, all those things. So for me, on paper, these teams, yeah, you could match them up, say offense, defense, special teams. Man, the special teams of the Rams, man, they really take a lot of chances. And you could say, man, do they have the advantage on the special teams against New England? That'd be one of the rare times we ever said that. But when you got some of the intangibles, coaching, experience, huge advantage from my perspective with New England going into this game.
Pats were pretty evenly matched, I think most people believed, with the Chargers. Chargers had more talent, pretty evenly matched overall, though, and they whooped them. The Pats were at a deficit against Kansas City as far as the matchups, and they were on the road, and they won that game in overtime. So, like, do I think that I could do the same thing I did with the Chargers, which is look at the top eight players in this game, how many are on the Rams? Yeah. Do I think that will be the deciding factor? Not anymore. Not when you've seen the two biggest games the Pats have played all year were their two best games they played all year, and not that we now also have the context of, is this a team that, for some reason this year, has played its best against its best competition? 6-0 now against teams that made the playoffs. Beat the Chiefs twice. Beat the Bears. Like, they had some bad losses against bad teams. The Titans and the Dolphins were a mediocre team. The Lions. But against good teams, the Pats played pretty damn well all year long. And the schematic edge that I would imagine they are going to come into the game with to go along with the drastic experience edge of the quarterbacks, to me, that can more than overcome potentially the what I think is the talent deficit. And we know the Patriots are going to be deeper than the Rams because the Rams are one of the least deep teams in the league. When you spend the type of money they do on frontline players, once you're past your starting 22, you're not going to have the depth other teams.
That's why it's really hard to do. If you do a tail of the tape and you try to do, it's very, very effective in basketball. You try to do the top eight players, the top six players, the top 10 players on this team. In basketball, it's easy to do because the effect offensively, defensively, they can dominate the game if you're dominating the top players. In football, you can't do that. We have a saying in the NFL, the team is only as good as the worst football player. So on a 53-man roster, it don't matter who got the best 10 players because you need 53 to be able to do it. And the bottom of the roster becomes very, very important. So when you look at New England, they will never look good on the tail of the tape. That's why against the Chargers, they didn't look good. They didn't look decided. That's why they look bad on the road. But now you put them in a bye week situation and you talk about top to bottom of that roster, 1 to 53, the New England Patriots and their experience, they have a decisive advantage on other teams.
But isn't this also why we place so much weight on being good at situational football? That even if you're at a talent deficit, because you understand the situation, you understand your players, you know what they're good at, what they're not good at, you understand, you know, how to be so tight on both sides of the ball, that's what makes this team so good and so dominant.
Well, and that's right. They are so rarely, the reason that we will bring up that Miami play at the end of the game for the rest of the year and into next year is because it was an outlier. Like, that was the rare game. Wait, the Patriots had that game won and they lost? That never happens to them. And so almost every other team in the league, it happens once or twice a season where it's like, man, how did we lose that game? And so absolutely right, Jenna. We know that the Patriots are not going to butcher the clock at the end of the half. We know that Belichick's not going to find himself, oh, my God, it's midway through the third quarter and I'm out of challenges. Like, those types of things that other teams shoot themselves in the foot on, the Pats never do.
And one thing, we got a little insight from Patrick Chung there. I've talked to Patrick Chung before, and one of the things he expressed to me was, he gets disappointed in the national media not giving New England and players like him credit for being very, very talented. So he sounded just as normal. Man, we're going to go out there and kick their A. They got a bunch of guys in the locker room. We try to make them out like they're robots. They're not. They got a bunch of guys like Patrick Chung week in and week out saying, man, listen, I got a great game plan, but I'm a very, very good football player. We don't acknowledge them enough.
All right, sticking with the Super Bowl, the Rams are hoping to have Todd Gurley at full strength, something he seemingly wasn't during the NFC Championship game. Gurley says his knee is fine, and Patriots linebacker Dont'a Hightower says he's expecting a lot of Gurley in the Super Bowl game plan. All right, CeCe, what should the Patriots expect to see from Todd Gurley?
Right, I would expect to see a lot of Todd Gurley. There's one thing in just reading through information, I was very shocked at Bill Belichick. He met Sean McVay last year at the scouting combine, and they exchanged phone numbers. And randomly during the season, after games, Bill Belichick will text Sean McVay. So I was watching the game and everything. Man, great game planning. You guys are explosive. You guys are dangerous. Specifically after the Minnesota game. I think Todd Gurley had 150 yards total offense in that game, 80 rushing, over 70 receiving. He texted him after that game. So I'm pretty certain that Bill Belichick, if he saw that game with Todd Gurley, he had 150 and he had that balance, that that's already in his memory because they got it. He contacted him after the game. So for me, I believe that they'll be expecting the Todd Gurley that we saw earlier in the season. And I believe that he is the one guy, just like last week. Who was it, Nick?
Tyreek Hill.
It's Todd Gurley this week. So it's harder for Bill Belichick to take a running back away than he can a wide receiver.
Yeah.
So also in trying to take a running back away, it should set up other things for other people on the field. So Todd Gurley, we should see one of the best versions of Todd Gurley that we've seen in the last 2 months. And I believe the New England Patriots, that is their number one game plan, is to eliminate Todd Gurley from being dominant.
Going into this year, see, what was the part of Todd Gurley's game that I thought differentiated him from Ezekiel Elliott? When I would say Gurley's the best back in football, what was the part of his game?
Receiving out of the backfield.
Absolutely right. And this year, it was a layup. Just like your Tyreek Hill to me, I tried to play it back to you. This year, that
neither
has
of
not,
you should play it with
okay,
me.
Okay, I apologize, sure Jenna. I didn't know what you were going to say. It's hairstyle. And so it's on the board.
Right.
But so this year, he has not been the dominant receiver he was last year. Only one game all year with more than six catches. That was the last game he played in the regular season against the Eagles. Only three games this year with more than 40 yards receiving. That was surprising to me. I didn't realize that until I was looking over it today because he had basically his average game, it was three catches, 35 yards. Four catches, 28 yards. Five catch, 51-yard game was a big game receiving for him. I think that has to be an enormous part of what they do. Now, it's hard. In this first Super Bowl, the Pats won. Marshall Faulk was the greatest, I believe, receiving running back ever, and they found a way to take him out of their offense and turn the greatest show on turf into a team that couldn't hit 20 points. So if they could do it to Marshall Faulk 20 years ago, I'm sure they will find a way to at least try to do it to Todd Gurley. But I don't think the Rams have a clear path to victory that doesn't involve, apologies for the double negative, a huge game from Todd Gurley. I think Gurley, the Chiefs showed you, you take Tyreek Hill away, we can find a way through Mahomes and other guys to score points. I think the Rams will struggle if Gurley can't be involved running and receiving.
But the Rams struggled for a second when Gurley was not involved in the NFC Championship game and they just threw C.J. Anderson out there and they found a way to run him and let him power through. Do you think you see the same thing if, for whatever reason, you don't get a lot early out of Todd Gurley?
No, I believe C.J. Anderson can be effective in moving the chains, but he doesn't have the explosiveness that would threaten New England. New England, their linebackers are not very, very fast. What they would be fearful of is Todd Gurley coming out of the backfield. So they need both their running backs to be effective, especially since Cooper Kupp, their wide receiver, is out. But C.J. Anderson only presents a certain, and that's a limited number of problems. New England against that type of running back, typically they do well.
And New England is fine with 12 play drives. They want to see if you can do it. What can hurt New England, it's the reason the Chiefs put up 30 in the second half on them twice this year, is if you can get them big plays. And so C.J. Anderson is not a big play threat to what you're talking about. Todd Gurley absolutely is. Like, if you're going to try to score with New England, you better do it with major chunk plays. That means Gurley and Cooks both need to have big games.
All right, take a break. Coming up, breaking news out of the NBA. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, we've got some breaking news on the Anthony Davis front. His agent has informed the Pelicans that he will not be signing a contract extension in New Orleans and has requested a trade. Davis says he wants to play for a championship competitor. Nick, you can't be completely surprised by this. What was your reaction?
The only surprise is that he is doing it this year rather than in the offseason. That I thought the way Anthony Davis had talked and the way Rich Paul and his agency have been quiet about this, it seemed to me like the way Anthony Davis was going to inform the Pelicans, you should trade me, is when they slid across the table to him 5 years, $240 million, and he slid it right back to him, said no thanks. But by doing it now, it forces their hand to have this discussion. If he is going to leave us in a year and a half, we are almost assuredly going to trade him in this offseason. Should we do it early? And calling up Boston and calling up the Lakers and saying, what's your best offer? Now, the Lakers' offer is everyone you want but LeBron and future picks for as long as we can give them to you. Mm-hmm. That's what the Lakers' offer is. Boston's offer's a little more complicated.
Yeah, very tricky and sensitive.
Right. Because so Boston can't trade for him this year unless they were to include Kyrie. It's a weird thing. You just have to trust me about the designated player thing. They can't have Anthony Davis and Kyrie both on the same contracts they're on. They could trade for him this offseason when Kyrie signs a new deal. But Boston is essentially eliminated from trading for him right now. So if the Pelicans want to do it right now, unless you think Boston's going to include Kyrie, which would kind of defeat the purpose of this thing, and I don't know if that – I don't think that's a possibility. Boston's eliminated from the discussion.
Which
other
leaves,
teams are going to leave the Lakers.
Until the summer.
Until the summer, right. That's what I'm saying right now. There's 10 days till the deadline, and Boston can't have Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving on the same contract or on the same team. I don't really understand it. Brian Windhorst explained it. I trust him. It's a designated player thing. So that's where this thing gets really intriguing, and that's where – Rich Paul didn't say there he wants to play for the Lakers, but he didn't have to.
No.
Because what are the other contenders that are contenders that have the assets where they could trade for him?
Very good, Nick. And this day was coming when he went over to Clutch Sports. It's just a matter of time. When he switched agents, Anthony Davis, and he decides to go with Clutch Sports, and Clutch Sports is going to be dominating the NBA. And I love the NBA. Not for Clutch Sports, but, man, the trade, the offseason now. There ain't no offseason in the NBA. And now if they don't trade Anthony Davis, because we thought it was just a foregone conclusion. The Warriors three-peat, KD, him and Steph, who gets the MVP in the finals, free agency for summer of 2019. Oh, no. We got it cooking before the trade deadline, before the All-Star break. So for me, huge advantage for the Los Angeles Lakers. Not only him deciding to go with Clutch Sports, but making this announcement, he forces that the Lakers have the advantage in getting him until this summer.
And the other part, sorry to interrupt you, Jenna, the New Orleans is the team most disappointed by when they hear this.
Yes.
The second most disappointed team, though, is Boston. Boston desperately wanted this to last until the offseason. Because in the offseason, Kyrie signs a new deal, and there's no longer that prohibition on them being on the same roster. And then they can have the conversation that they would have is, hey, if we don't have an assurance from Anthony Davis that he's going to sign an extension here, would we still include Tatum? What would our package be? But Boston would know we can trump it. If we want to go all in, we can trump anything the Lakers offer. Because you could argue that Boston's got a couple assets better than the Lakers' best asset.
And NBA fans, you shouldn't be surprised by this, because if you follow Nick Wright, Nick Wright's been saying for the last 9 to 12 months, this is the new normal in the NBA. NBA stars forcing their way out early. Out of teams. We first saw Paul George do it. Then we saw Kawhi do it. Mm-hmm. And now we didn't think AD would do it until the summer. But now this is the new norm. Guys pushing away more money, just saying, I want to go to a different destination.
The money's so big that
Thought they would care more.
Right. What's the difference between $240 million and $200 million? Well, it's $40 million. But for guys at this level superstar that have another 8 figures coming in every year in a shoe deal, that also are thinking about legacy, like you can turn down that money. And the phrase for it, Jenna, is there's free agency. And I didn't coin this phrase, but I like it a lot. This is pre-agency.
Right.
Guys, before they're free agents, executing their pre-agency, I think, is the way to look at it.
But the Lakers' assets, if New Orleans has a chance here to decide what they want and what they can get a lot, the Lakers' assets aren't the same as they were at the beginning of the season before, right? And the Celtics could offer much more this summer, at least according to New Orleans. I'm sure for New Orleans than LA can now. So does it behoove New Orleans maybe then to wait anyway?
I think that's a really smart discussion, and I think it's a really good point. Like, get it now or wait until the summer if we can get better assets. The risk they would run is this, that Anthony Davis, by the time the summer comes along, says, hey, I just want the whole world to know I'm only signing an extension with the Lakers. So similar to what Kawhi, remember how depressed the trade market was for Kawhi? Because teams were like, man, it's going to be a one-year rental.
He wouldn't commit.
So if the Pelicans do that, and then that comes, he says that, then I don't think the Celtics are putting Tatum out there. In fact, I'm certain they're not putting Tatum out there. They probably would include Jaylen Brown. But your original point, I was joking about this before the show, see, if Brandon Ingram had broke his forearm first game of the year, his trade value is probably higher than it is now.
Right.
Seeing him play and his lack of development has hurt his trade value to your
point. It's hurt the Lakers as far as young assets. But Kuzma, if you look at him, Kuzma's gotten better.
Yes.
So that might help the package. But let's go to Boston. Tatum and Brown, they have not helped themselves this year either. Now, not as much as Ingram,
yep,
because we saw them in the playoffs playing at a high level. But the Celtics in year number two, the younger players are not necessarily enhancing that package, even though they have significantly more to offer the Pelicans and the Lakers.
I'm going to make this point for the third time because people I know watch a bunch of shows, get a bunch of information from different people. People are going to get this wrong today and talk about what Boston will trade for Anthony Davis. The answer is they can't. Unless they include Kyrie Irving in the trade, they legally, according to the NBA bylaws, cannot trade for Anthony Davis until this summer. So if he's moved at the deadline, it will either be for Kyrie Irving and other pieces, that's not going to happen, or to a different team. This is not the Lakers' assets competing with the Celtics' assets. That's not until this summer. So he's moved in the next 10 days. It's not going to be the Celtics unless Kyrie's leaving.
And disregard what I said in the B's, Lakers, be patient. No, forget your patience now.
Okay. Well, yeah, because this is the thing.
Has he come out and said, I want to play for the Lakers?
No, but he just bought a house there, and he signed with Rich Paul, and LeBron and him seem awful friendly.
So we can assume that Boston is really not truly in the running for this.
Boston should be in the running. They will be, but Boston, it gets better in the summer than it is right now.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.